Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Okay, today we're talking with Joe Stagner, who calls himself the Misfit Geek, and whose title, I believe, is Community PM for Web Technology. Did I get that right, Joe?
Hey, I answer to almost anything, man.
There you go. Now, what people have to know about Joe is that about, I don't know how many years ago, must be 5 or 6 years ago, he swept into my life, adopted me as my godfather, and decided that he was going to absorb me into Microsoft.
For which you may never forgive me.
It's I am deeply grateful and totally revengeful. So the quick story was, he said, he called me up, and first of all, he decided that I should be an MVP, which was a wonderful thing. And for anybody who ever is put up for MVP, I will tell you that my experience was, it came, he said, I'd like to make you an MVP. I said, okay, great, thank you. And then I got this form. I think it was like 35-page form of everything I've ever done since I was in kindergarten. And I said, well, I'm not filling this out. Finally, one weekend, filled it out, sent it in, and then came this torrent of wonderful benefits from being an MVP. So that was truly great.
Yeah, except now I'm going to get like a million emails from folks saying, Joe, make me an MVP.
There you go, which has become a little harder to do. And then he called me up and said, I want you to come to this conference called Mix. I said, I've never heard of it. He said, well, I'll put you on a panel on open source. I said, well, that's perfect, because I don't know anything about open source. Went, had a great time. His hidden agenda was to have me be in the audience when Scott Guthrie announced Silverlight, and blew my mind. And I went home and formed a consulting organization called Silverlight Consulting. And then Joe again intervened and called me up and said, come down to Microsoft, and why don't you work from the inside rather than from the outside?
Well, the plan that I've never shared with you before is, the plan was you were going to be my replacement.
Ah, if I'd only known, that would have enhanced the appeal of the job.
Yeah, so for 10 years, I've been saying, all right, this is your last year at Microsoft. It's time to start another company.
Yeah, well, I know the feeling, being 3.5 years into my 1 year at Microsoft. But
well, I was, you know, I was really firm when I started with Microsoft, you know, coming up on 10 years ago, that I was only going to do it for a year. I was a serial startup guy. I had just sold a company, actually a year earlier, I had sold a company that I had built in Manhattan. And the back end of the deal was, I had to serve as the acquiring company's president and CEO for a year. And they were a publicly traded company. So, you know, a lot of what I had to do was, it was all business, but a lot of what I had to do was position the company for the parent company for acquisition. So it was a lot of dealing with shareholders and the press and, you know, the whole sort of Wall Street investor crowd. And I did that. I resigned on the 365th day. We announced the acquisition, that the company was going to be acquired. And so, you know, everything went according to plan. And I was going to start another company. And the original investors in the company that I had just left had made an investment deal with me, and I had an appointment to pick up a check for the first round of venture capital in Manhattan 2 days after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. So, you know, they still wanted to do the startup, but they actually didn't physically did not have access to their money. The whole financial network in the Northeast shut down. So they wanted to wait for, you know, 6 to 10 months or whatever, and I'd already taken a few months off. And so I thought, geez, you know, I've been complaining about Microsoft for most of my career. I'll go and you know, I'll go see if I can do anything interesting there. And that, but only for a year. And voila, like 10 years ago.
There you are, 10 years later. Yeah.
You know, Scott Guthrie's. You know, I always joke that, you know, Scott Guthrie's a little like a capo in the mob. You know, just when you think you're out, they pull you back in.
you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Right.
So what are you working on now?
Well, I just finished a month on the road speaking about WebMatrix and Orchard and a little bit about MVC. And so now I'm settling in, and I'm going to go on a jihad of sorts with so for years and years, I've been providing guidance to web developers. In the past 5 years, lots around Ajax. And our web stack and our Ajax story both have really evolved and matured in recent years. So I'm going to build a lot of content to help developers make the move from doing Azimex SOAP-based web services for Ajax scenarios and using web forms to replacing that Azimex-based backend with WCF and front-end with jQuery-based Ajax. And so, you know, one of the things that we did with the Ajax Control Toolkit is we sort of mixed metaphors and called all of that stuff Ajax. About half of that stuff had nothing to do with Ajax. It was just clever user interface stuff that was JavaScript-based. So I'm going to do, you know, a bunch of jQuery JavaScript UI stuff and then a bunch of Ajax-specific WCF-fed programming style stuff. And this is going to be what I really want to do is, as much as possible, do stuff that folks can use no matter whether they're using web forms, ASP.NET MVC3, or web matrix.
Well, ambitious, to say the least.
Well, and to add to that, so the other thing, things I'm going to do later in 2011 is I'm going to do a bunch of HTML5 stuff. So I'm going to provide guidance support for the HTML5 initiatives that are coming out of Scott Guthrie's world, as well as the IE group.
I'm and also integrate that with Silverlight.
Let's talk about the Silverlight, the dead product, right?
Yeah, thanks.
and lastly, when we get closer to Windows 8 shipping, I'm going to be providing client development guidance around the Win8 dev story.
Well, my hope is that at the Firestarter, we're recording this before the Firestarter, and that at the Firestarter, the first week in December, there'll be not only discussion about the future of Silverlight, which is certainly what we've announced, but at least some discussion about how Silverlight and HTML5 work and play well together.
You know, I think that whole thing around, you know, Silverlight is dead, and a certain journalist who makes a living commenting on Microsoft's, you know, talking about, you know, choosing to interpret for us that Bob Moo's comments at a recent event meant that, you know, could be interpreted as the death of Silverlight. What complete crap! I mean, you know, and you know me, so I'm
trying. Come on, Jeff, tell me what you feel about it.
Well, I'm working really hard to use a politically correct vocabulary, but what complete crap! So, you know, the Bob was talking about the evolution of our stack, and, you know, how Silverlight was pivotal to our Windows Phone 7 story, and, you know, everybody jumped on the, oh, he forgot to say, you know, about Silverlight version 6. And I just think that's ridiculous. And anybody that's done detailed research into HTML5 is very exciting. It has virtually no effect on Silverlight's adoption or use as a development platform anywhere in the predictable future. Right, so there's stuff that HTML5 will be much better at, but so what? You know, I'm not going to change my business logic deployment to the client based on HTML5. You know, HTML5's got some cool stuff. You know, the modern browser's JavaScript execution is faster, and certainly where it's appropriate, I'll use that stuff. It doesn't negate Silverlight at all. And, you know, in terms of Microsoft's commitment, you know, I've talked to Scott Guthrie. He's got more people working on Silverlight now than he ever has since its inception.
Well, that was fairly definitive. Thank you. I think that should clarify that and hopefully put that to rest. Go ahead.
I just think it's hysterical. I have a love-hate relationship with, you know, the industry press, and I sort of get a kick out of, you know, I understand that, you know, it's like everything else, the more you drive traffic to whatever you publish, the more value you represent as a journalist or an author or whatever.
Well, without impugning any particular journalist at all, although we've come fairly close, I will say that we know that there is very little story in a headline that says Microsoft reaffirms its position on everything and changes nothing. Makes a small headline.
Sure.
So to some degree, there's a, I don't know about conflict of interest, but there's an interest in creating some level of consternation because that brings readership. And I get that. And I've written my own provocative headlines, but...
Yeah, but you didn't do that on purpose.
Well, that's true. I do very little on purpose. Well,
but back before I went through my politically correct rebranding and moved my blog from Misfit Geek to MS Joe, every time I needed an influx of new readers, I would post something inflammatory, you know, because, you know, you get tons of people to, you know, to come to your blog and call you an idiot.
Right. Well, and the problem is, of course, when you're not attempting to do that, it happens anyway. But moving right along, let's go back for a bit to what you were saying you're going to be building, because there were a lot of pieces there, and I'd like to take them apart a little bit and understand them. And so one thing that you were saying was that you were going to be paying a lot more attention to, first of all, dividing up our understanding of Ajax and into jQuery-based JavaScript on the one hand and Ajax-specific technology on the other. Did I get that right?
Yes.
And so tell me about what would distinguish those two.
Well, so, I mean, we really muddied the definition. I mean, Ajax was one of those industry terms that all of a sudden, you know, it's Ajax is hot, so, you know, add Ajax to the name of everything because it'll help. Ajax is really, even though Ajax is no longer considered an acronym, Ajax-style development and Ajax-oriented architectures are really about the conversation that takes place between the browser and the server. So, for example, in the Ajax control toolkit, we had a super popular control extender, Rounded Corner, right? And what Rounded Corner did was you added that control extender and pointed it at a standard web forms control, and it rounded the corners of that web control. So very nice aesthetic attribute, but had nothing to do with Ajax, except it was part of our Ajax control toolkit. So there's a lot, I mean, one of the great things about jQuery is that there's a lot of really good, easy to use, already built for us UI stuff that's available. And we, you know, we definitely want to use that, especially for, you know, guys like me. I'm aesthetically challenged. I have no artistic ability whatsoever. So jQuery and the jQuery UI libraries and other jQuery stuff make it really easy to do sort of nicer UIs, but that's not Ajax.
Okay. So give me a couple examples of things that specifically are Ajax, that undisputably are Ajax.
So anytime we're communicating with the server, so there are, for example, lots of patterns that I implemented using WebForms and Azimax, and I'm going to re-implement using jQuery and WCF. So things like the incremental page display pattern, where we don't want the user to have to wait for an entire page that's full of stuff to be loaded before he can start to interact with the page. So I'll load a page container, and then I'll have an Ajax conversation taking place between the code, the JavaScript code running in the browser, and the server that fetches other parts of the page to be populated. Another is the predictive fetch pattern, where my page renders, and then while the reader is looking at the page, my JavaScript code makes an Ajax service call to fetch the stuff that user is most likely going to navigate to next, so that when they do that navigation to look at the next bit of content, it's already there. There's no round trip to the server necessary, so it's instantaneous. And that provides real aesthetic performance to the user interface experience.
Okay, that was great. That helped very much in clarifying the distinction. You, along the way, said that you are going to be looking at converting from Azimax to WCF. And so can you talk a little bit about why? Is this just the next big thing, or why bother making that conversion?
Well, so that's a great question. And I've held off on sort of becoming a proponent of the move to WCF until now. And I'll talk about why until now. So the problem historically with WCF is that while there has been great value in tackling the learning curve, using WCF, especially in early versions, has been inordinately more complicated. However, I think the timing is right, because the WCF team, especially with version 4 and the stuff that they're doing now that is sort of in community preview, really simplifies the process and really specifically addresses some issues for Ajax programmers. So the thing about Azimax is it's really easy, right? I mean, .NET from the very beginning was built to facilitate service-oriented architecture and service-oriented programming. And then with the Ajax stack that we added in 3.5, you know, we had the script manager and we had proxy generation in Visual Studio. So you created an Azimax file and created a class method, and you just decorated that method with an attribute, web method. And then in the consuming code from inside Visual Studio, you would just say, add web reference, you get a reference to that server and to that web service. And when you added web reference, the Visual Studio would generate a JavaScript proxy, so which made it very easy to call from your client-side code. Now, so simplicity was great, but there are some issues that over the long term become roadblocks using ASMX. So one is that ASMX is a SOAP-based technology, right? Simple Object Access Protocol. Now, SOAP is great if you need the facilities that SOAP provides, right? And SOAP is not an HTTP-specific technology. SOAP is a the Simple Object Access Protocol. SOAP can run on kinds of all sorts of different line protocols like HTTP. But because of that generity, it's richly functional, but it's fairly heavyweight. So there's still times, even if we're doing Ajax-style programming, we'll still have to use SOAP because we need things like routing or receipt confirmation or WS security or any of the great set of standards that are built around SOAP. But it's overkill if we're just doing conversation between our browser and our server fetching content. The other thing is that ASMX, by definition, requires IIS to run, which can, from a flexibility perspective, can be an inhibition for us. The other thing is that SOAP also infers that all requests are made via POST. And for folks that have done more research into the way that the web works and start building more, web 2.0 plus style applications, particularly if they're looking at REST, a restriction of the ability to make server requests only via POST sort of conflicts with REST philosophy. Historically, when ASP.NET was first developed, it was targeted at, classical client-server developers. So we abstracted the plumbing of the web, and at the time, it was genius. But here we are a decade later, and developers more and more have come to understand and perhaps even embrace how the World Wide Web works. So if you're cooperating with that level of abstraction, you don't care what HTTP verb is used to make a request to the server. But if you're moving forward to really sort of embracing how the internet and the World Wide Web works, one of the things that we want to do is we want to do a couple of things, but there's some things around REST that we want to be able to do. One is we want not just clean URLs. Some people think that that it's just about clean, pretty URLs, so no extensions, no arguments on the URL. But really, we want semantically accurate URLs. So, contact, msjoe.com, whack, contacts, whack, Jesse Liberty. That's right. So that's a context specific URL to do something with the contact in MS Joe's contact collection whose identifier is Jesse Liberty. So what if I want to create Jesse Liberty? Well, so with ASMX, I would have to use an extension, use a query string argument that's specifically called the create method. But using REST and embracing HTTP, I can leverage the HTTP verb. So POST can create, GET can return, DELETE can delete, using those verbs without having to specify command line arguments as though they're class method arguments. And there are tons of advantages to doing that.
Okay, so now you're in the position where the WCF technology has matured enough and has provided a high enough level of abstraction where that trade-off is now valuable. And it's time, and what I hear you saying is that you're going to be moving a lot of the guidance that you've been providing for ASMX to WCF. Are you going to be providing guidance about how people make that conversion or just showing how to do new things in WCF?
Well, both. And the first thing I want to say is it's not just a matter of it's not just a matter of being able to do REST style programming in WCF. So WCF can work with not just HTTP, but there are other protocols. So for example, I'm a huge advocate of the use of message queuing in large scale transactional environments, right? So for folks that have worked with really huge systems that have to be 100% reliable. So in an ASMX world, if you reach a service threshold because of performance or the size of your infrastructure or what the load is, when your back end fails to handle a transaction, that business just gets lost. Using message queuing is almost real-time transactions, but when you reach a performance or a scalability threshold in your back end, you don't lose business. There just is an increased latency between request and response. You can do WCF programming, and you can use message queuing instead. You don't have to use IIS. Your WCF service can be hosted by anything that can answer on TCP/IP. So there's a lot of flexibility that we can't cover in a quick talk. With the enhancements that are made through version 4 of WCF, as well as the REST specific / HTTP specific stuff that the WCF team is working on now, it gets really, really easy. So yeah, I'm gonna do net new stuff, but I'm also gonna show folks how your business logic is easy to pick up and drop into WCF. And in fact, for jumpstart purposes, today with WCF4, you can pretty much program SOAP services in WCF4 the same way that you did Azimax, and that's gonna be sort of my first set of demos.